The Voice of Bowen, 95.1 GEM FM.
Good morning, Bowen, and welcome to the Check-In with Sally on 95.1 GEM FM. This is a space where we slow things down a little and talk honestly about what's going on beneath the surface. Hey, Roxy, how you going?
Hey, Sally, I'm really well. It feels strange me not introing the show.
Well, thanks for letting me have a crack at it today.
No, that's fantastic. I feel really relaxed.
Well, that's good. Yeah. So today's topic is depression. And we're talking, it's not just about having a bad day, and it's not just be positive version, but the real lived experience of depression, what it feels like, how it shows up, and how people can move through it with support. If you're listening today and this topic feels close to home, I want you to know that you don't have to listen perfectly. You can dip in and dip out. You can just let the words wash over you. Depression is common. It's not rare, and it's not a personal failure. It's something that everybody, that some people experience throughout their lives, and that you can definitely get help for, and there's lots of support out there. And we're going to be running through lots of different things today about what it looks like, how it impacts certain age groups and certain people, and then what the treatment options are and what some of the really good at-home treatments can be for depression as well. But before we throw to a song, Roxy's going to tell you about an exciting and new competition that we have.
Yes, Sally, we're all very excited here at GEM FM, aren't we? We've finally started our competition season.
That's right.
I've missed the competitions because it's a great opportunity for everyone to text in. We know who's listening and who's having in for a bit of fun. But anyway, today it's actually you need to count how many marbles you think we've dropped and then text your guess into our phone number here, our mobile number, which is 0484 510 152, and if you're correct, you will go into the draw to win a $50 voucher from This Pair Footwear, which it will be drawn Monday morning from 7 a.m. on the Rise and Shine show. That's a mouthful, that one, isn't it? With Sam. So we will play the sound for you a few times through the show. So if you miss it the first time, don't worry, we will play it again. But anyway, let's have a listen and make sure you text in.
It's the secret sound. Here's your cue to listen in close. How many marbles are we dropping? Here it comes. Counted them? Text your guest now to 0484 510 152, and if you've got it right, you're in the draw to win.
Here comes the sun, I say, it's alright.
Oh dear, we missed. We were so busy chatting. There you go, Sally, you're on.
Oh, thank you, Roxy. I guess what I wanted to talk about today is some of the misunderstandings as well around depression. And one of the biggest misunderstandings about depression is that it's just sadness and that people just feel sad. But depression is often feeling really flat or heavy or empty or numb. And sometimes it means that you're not even sad enough to cry, because not everyone who's got depression is going to be crying all the time, for example, but they can be feeling so flat and numb that they don't register much emotion at all. So I think that we're going to try and get through some of the myths as well today.
Yeah.
That sometimes people can think that someone's depressed, but actually maybe they're just going through something, or that people are like, oh, they're not depressed because they're not sad all the time. But actually they could just be, even if they're really angry or irritated or those types of things too, can also be signs.
Because, I was going to ask you, like, how do you know when you are depressed?
Mm.
Like, what are those?
Yeah, we're going to be running through some of that a little bit later in the segment. But firstly, we're just going to go through a few stats, because I think sometimes people can also think that depression is really rare.
Mm-hmm.
But in Australia, around 1 in 7 people will experience depression in their lifetime.
1 in 7?
1 in 7.
Wow.
Yeah, so it's actually much more common than perhaps we would think. And that each year around 1 million Australians will experience depression.
And is that in one particular age group, or is it spread just right across?
That's spread right across.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that it would be remiss of me to not talk about suicide when it comes to talking about depression, because suicide remains one of the leading causes of death in young Australians, and people who complete suicide are often depressed. And I think that it's really important that we mention that, and that, as always, if anyone's having any of those sorts of thoughts, it's really important that you reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14. And I'll keep saying that number and keep recommending that people contact them, because they're the best crisis support that we have. 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And in many people experiencing depression, they don't seek help. And that's often because of shame, stigma, or thinking they should just cope better. You know, some people it can be like, but my life's awesome, why do I still feel like this? I think that one can be really hard to wrap your head around, and that's because sometimes the assumption is that you're depressed because of circumstances. Depression doesn't discriminate like that. You can have that chemical imbalance and suffer from depression regardless of how amazing your life is.
Right.
I always use Owen Wilson, the Hollywood actor, who... And he's a comedian. He's always in all the funny movies and all that sort of thing. And he suffers from depression. And people would say, yeah, but he's got endless money at his disposal, or he's, you know, really successful and really famous, but he still does suffer from it. So depression doesn't discriminate like that. It can affect anybody.
Robin Williams.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, he was, you would never guess that he was, you know.
Yeah. And he would definitely have been using humor as a defense mechanism and a bit of a mask.
Yeah.
As well, for sure. So if you're one of those people who don't bring it up because of shame, and I think that's also really contributes, unfortunately, to our suicide rates, is around the stigma and the shame attached to feeling depression. And if that's you, I really see you. And I really want you to know that there's definitely help out there, and there is no shame in reaching out for help. And we don't need to wait to get to a crisis point. We don't need to wait until it feels like there's no other options. Reach out when things aren't going so great, and that way we can do an intervention and there can be improvements rather than trying to dig out of the darkest hole. So today we're going to gently unpack what depression really is, how it shows up, how it looks different across ages, and what actually helps. And as always, if you feel up for it, you can text me anonymously on 0484 510 152. You're not alone here.
Absolutely. All right, we might have a bit of a song happening here. Sally, what do you reckon?
Sounds good.
But if we are wise, we just might have a problem that you'll understand. We all need somebody to lean on. Lean on me when you're not strong, and I'll be your friend. I'll help you carry on, for it won't be long till I'm gonna need somebody to lean on. You just call on me, brother.
I love that song for today's topics because, yeah, we really need to be leaning on each other and getting support from each other if we're suffering from symptoms relating to depression. So before we go any further today, I want to clearly define what we mean when we say depression. So clinically, depression is a mood disorder that affects how a person thinks, feels, and behaves. And it lasts longer than a rough patch. It's persistent and it interferes with daily life. So I think there's some really significant clarifying bits of information that we need to know.
Yes.
If you wake up and you have a really rough day, you're not depressed or you don't have depression.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's when it is persistent and it interferes with your daily life. So it starts impacting probably all the balls that you have in the air.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So things like your relationship or perhaps it's your job or your parenting, or it could be financially and those types of things.
Right.
And when it starts to impact those areas of your life and it's quite persistent and it continues on, then that's when we start to look at those things.
Right. So could it be just related to, I don't know, say, I'm trying to think, like if it's continuous and you can't bring it back to a particular reason? Or does it come back to a particular reason?
Well, I guess I don't want to... of course, there's definitely elements of depression being triggered by circumstances or an event or a loss and those types of things. But I think we need to be really careful about not confusing it with things like grief and not confusing it with things like burnout, which can have similarities to them. And I actually have that to talk about towards the end of today's segment. But I think that... It can be triggered by a life event.
Okay,
yeah, because that can definitely trigger depression, but there can definitely be elements of it just coming around for no reason at all.
Right.
And nothing's happened that can trigger that as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
And I think one of the most helpful ways to understand depression is to break it into three parts. So the cognitive, which is how we think, the emotional, which is how we feel, and behavioral, so what we do or stop doing.
Right.
So let's walk through those. So with the cognitive symptoms, this is, you know, about your thinking and it's about your thoughts. So depression affects thinking patterns. So you might notice constant self-criticism. So that negative self-talk and putting yourself down a lot. The I'm not good enough thoughts are there. hopelessness about the future, where it doesn't seem bright anymore. It doesn't seem like anything is there to look forward to, and you don't do any future planning and that sort of thing as well. The black and white thinking, so where it's just one or the other and there's no grey stuff in between. So can you think of any of those types of thought patterns, Roxy?
Yeah, I mean, I think we've all had that sort of situation at some point, right, where that's happened, where you just really everything's quite bleak.
And nothing's going to get better.
No.
And that's that black and white thinking, this won't get better. Yeah. Difficulty concentrating. So that's a really important one, is that people can have really poor focus and attention.
Yeah.
Whether it's when you're at work and you're finding it really difficult to maintain focus on that horrendous spreadsheet that you're looking at.
Yes.
Or whether it's even watching TV, you'll hear the people talk about doom scrolling, and that's when you're just on your phone but you don't even know what you're looking at. And that can be a sign of depression as well, because there's that lack of concentration or that lack of attention that you can give to things. Well, you might not be able to read anymore. It's like if you're a really avid reader with novels, all of a sudden you can't pick them up anymore, or they don't hold your attention anymore.
And why is that? Because your mind's somewhere else?
Yeah, well, your brain is just impacted cognitively by depression. It slows it down and it stops your attention from being as laser focused and that sort of thing as well. Yeah.
That's really shocking, isn't it?
It's really tough, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Another one can be, another cognitive symptom is indecisiveness.
Obviously,
these need to be taken all together.
Yeah,
I know that there are clearly indecisive people who aren't depressed. Yes. However, and that's because there's too many options and it's really hard to consider them all because your brain is just really foggy, or it feels just feels like way too much pressure, or it feels like you're just like, but I just can't, that's just not something that I can think about right now. Like, don't ask me where to go for dinner because there's too many options, or don't, you know, ask me about a holiday that we could take because I'm just like, but I just don't. Yeah. And so people have a lot of trouble even articulating what that indecisiveness feels like.
Yeah.
Thoughts like, I'm a burden, or what's the point? And I think that's the really tough ones, about that hopelessness and helplessness that people can feel. But it can get, some people get into those types of frames of mind where they're like, what's sort of the point of this, and why would I bother, and those types of things. Just important to know that there's definitely help out there. And so here's the tricky thing, that these thoughts don't feel like symptoms. They feel like facts.
In your own head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You think this is true.
Mm.
Because depression lies to you. It tells you that this is always going to be like this and you're never going to feel any better, and this is just what you're going to have to endure.
Right. Wow.
Yeah.
That makes so much sense, doesn't it? I'm just thinking for people that maybe do end their lives because they can't see beyond. It's their mind is telling them that that's...
Because it's quite all encompassing.
Yes.
Because when you're in that fog... That's what people really like to describe it as, because your brain feels really foggy. It can feel like there's no way out, and it can feel like this is just how it is now, and I'm not going to get any better. The light's gone out in me. You know, it's been dimmed so much, or it's completely extinguished, that it's not going to come back. I think that can be really tough for people to...
That would be very tough.
So hope's a really big thing when it comes to depression. Yeah. So, because, depression filters information, so it narrows your perspective and it highlights the negatives and minimizes the positives.
So while you're in a depressed state, I will perceive things in a more negative narrative, basically.
Absolutely.
Right.
Yeah. Because you can see them. They are glaringly obvious to you.
Yes.
Whereas even if there was a positive thing to present itself, you'd be like, oh, yeah, but whatever. Look at all this other stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think that's... Yeah, that people can really struggle with that as well. And it's not that your life has necessarily gotten worse. It's that your brain is scanning your life differently.
Right.
So, unfortunately, it's doing something called a confirmation bias.
Oh, okay, yes.
So, I think we've mentioned this before. It's when you seek or only see the evidence that supports what you're thinking. So, you know, I feel really down, or I feel really flat and unmotivated and... You know, there's not really much of a bright future. And then when evidence presents itself that supports that, you grab a hold of that.
Yes.
And you look at that and you only see that and you don't see the other things.
And it just compounds and adds to the whole mood.
Yeah.
And feeling.
Yes.
Wow.
Absolutely. So you can see how you can get caught up and just in this cycle, and it can feel impossible to get out of.
I was about to say, like, how hard would it be to get out, break out of that cycle?
Yeah.
Because you're always just processing, and the processing would make the circle smaller and smaller, like it must condense more and more over time, where that's all you're seeing is...
Yeah. So I think it's really important to know, though, that this is treatable.
Yes.
Yeah. And that once you can recognize that things aren't going so well and that you're feeling flatter than what you want to be, or more often than what, than not feeling flat, it's those types of things where you're like, oh, I need to go, I'm going to go chat to my doctor.
Yeah.
Or I'm going to reach out and make an appointment with a psychologist, or those types of things. Or I'm going to assess what I can do at home to see if that will, that will impact my mood first before seeking external help.
Yes.
Yeah. Because not only does it affect you cognitively, it also affects you emotionally. So some of the emotional symptoms, and that's those feelings that we talk about, it can be, of course, the very clear and obvious one is persistent sadness. So that's that ongoing, and it's sort of always there. It can be quite constant and pervasive as well, so it keeps on being there. It can be emptiness, that numbness we were talking about, but it can also present as irritability. So the people who just always seem frustrated and always seem cranky and always you can't say anything right because they jump down your throat, or, you know, just that sort of snapping a lot as well can be the emotional symptom of depression as well. Tearfulness. And so it's just tearing up, even if they might not be talking about something that seems particularly sad, but it's really triggering these tears for them. So tearfulness is another one. And this is probably one of the really big ones, is a loss of joy in things that used to matter. A loss of joy in things that you used to find pleasurable, things that you used to find joyful, things that you used to find fun. All of a sudden you're like, I am just not going to do that. Like if your favorite thing's, I don't know, going for a motorbike ride, and all of a sudden you can't even look at your motorbike. Or if it's your favorite thing is gardening and you can't even pick up a tool, a gardening tool, and go outside. Or any of those types of things where you're like, there's no point in doing that because it's not going to bring me joy anymore. And it's just on that. So unfortunately what also happens when you feel depressed is that you stop doing the things that make you feel good because you lack the motivation and because you lack the interest and because you don't find the joy that you used to find in the things that you used to do. So therefore you stop doing them, so then you feel even worse. So then you stop doing them, so then you feel even worse. So it's just this unfortunate... it's a really tough cycle, like we've been talking about.
Yes.
To get out of.
That's very tough. That's because I didn't realize that it was so constant. That, you know, sometimes we all feel down but you get out of it.
Yeah.
But this is like persistent.
And don't get me wrong, I think there's definitely high functioning people out there with depression, right, who can still get to work and still concentrate, but there's always, there can be this undercurrent of the sadness, an undercurrent of that difficulty with focus, or undercurrent of difficulties bringing themselves up and out of that mood.
And is another one like disinterest in other people and what they do?
Absolutely. That'll be moving into that behavioral symptom where, which is fine, which is definitely that social isolation and withdrawal. Yeah, for sure. But covering off on the emotional side of things is that sometimes the hardest one to describe is flatness because it's almost like there's no peaks and troughs sometimes. So yes, you could be feeling sad, but it's never any sadder and it's never any happier. It's just kind of that really flat baseline. If you imagine on like a heart rate monitor, there's no ups and downs in that beat. It's just quite flat. And people often say, I don't feel sad enough to cry. I just feel nothing. That can also be described as apathy.
Right.
For those out there. And that emotional blunting can be incredibly isolating because that's because you don't feel like going to a social event because you're like, what's the point? It's not going to make me feel any better. Do you know what I mean? Like I'm not going to get that nice high that I get from being with the people that I love and being surrounded by them.
Yeah.
And yeah, so that one, that's the, one of the ones that really prevents you from reaching out to as well, because you're like, but I just, I'm too flat. I just, what's the point? It's probably a lot of that conversation around that. Yeah.
Wow.
I'm just wondering if you think we should throw to a song before we get into the behavioural symptoms.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get to it. This is another good one. One of your choices. Sally?
Ooh, it is a good one.
Coldplay, bit of Coldplay. For you, yeah.
When you try your best but you don't succeed, when you get what you want but
not what you need. When you feel so tired but you can't sleep, stuck in reverse, and the tears come streaming down your face. When you lose something you can't replace, when you love someone but it goes to waste, could it be worse? Lights will
from you got nothing to lose, and maybe we'll make something. job. Finally see what it means to be living. See, our man's got a problem. Live with a bottle as a lady. He said his body's too old for work. His body's too young like his. So mama went off and left him. She wanted more from life than he could give. I said somebody's got to take care of him. So we fly away, still gotta make a decision. Leave tonight or live and die this way. So I remember when we were driving in your car. We speed too fast, I feel like I was drunk. Did I play out the rules? And your arm felt nice right around my shoulder. And I had a feeling that I belong.
Hey Bowen, you're tuned in to the Check-In Show with Sally on Gem FM on 95.1. Gotta love me a bit of Luke Combs in the morning. So today, if you've been tuning in, we're talking about depression, and I was going through the three main categories that we can describe depression with, so cognitive, emotional, and now we're about to chat about the behavioural side of things. And I really wanted to also say that I'm only mentioning some of the symptoms. There are symptoms out there that other people might be experiencing that are associated with depression. We're just going through some of the main ones today. So behaviorally, depression often looks like withdrawal. So it's things like cancelling plans, staying in bed, avoiding calls and messages, reduced motivation, neglecting self-care, sleeping too much or too little, and changes in appetite. That's just some of the descriptive ones there. So the cancelling plans, staying in bed, avoiding calls, that sort of stuff is really typical social withdrawal. And even if you've been a social butterfly or whether you're an extrovert or an introvert, it's withdrawing more than what you used to do. So if, you know, you used to catch up with your mates all the time or you used to like check in with them all the time and all of a sudden you just go MIA and there's radio silence, then that can be a symptom of depression as well. Right. Also, just the not wanting to socialise.
Mm.
And this is even if you know that it's good for you.
Yeah.
And I guess what I want to say is that we are social beings. Mm. We are definitely meant to be connected to others, and that depression unfortunately makes us feel like we don't want to be, and that just perpetuates that depression.
Yes.
Because then we're not hanging out with our mates and getting the support that we need from them or from our family as well. And then motivation's got to be pretty much the biggest problem when it comes to depression, because the lack of motivation prevents you from doing all of the things that might make you feel better. Because you can probably, a lot of people can acknowledge, you know what, I need to be catching up with my mates more. I need to be moving my body more. I need to be eating better, or I need to be trying to get better sleep. And unfortunately, you can know everything that's going to make you feel better, but finding the motivation to actually achieve or complete or do any of those is the really bad part, is a really tough thing. That's the thing that's really tough to get on top of. And one of the things this one's probably a bit more what people imagine when they think about people being depressed is that neglecting that self-care. So sometimes it's not even a motivation to shower or to brush your teeth or to do your hair or any of that, or to dress into, you know, nice clothes or to get out of your pajamas, that sort of stuff too.
Yeah.
So yeah, personal hygiene can take a hit.
Right. Wow.
Yeah. I guess the really interesting bit then at the end is that depression can actually present itself with sleeping too much or too little. So you can talk to people who can sleep for like 14 hours in a night.
Yeah.
And then you can talk to someone who will get 2 hours sleep.
Yeah.
And whether that's – so I know that the people will be like, oh, but that's insomnia, and that's true, but sleep disturbance in depression is extremely common. So whether that sleep disturbance looks like difficulty falling asleep, well, maybe you can fall asleep really easy, but then you're waking up all night. Or some people can wake up really early and not get back to sleep, and I'm talking, you know, like 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, they wake up and just cannot get back to sleep.
So for those people who aren't sleeping, what's happening? Are they ruminating in their head? What are they? Are they thinking about the problem which they can't solve? Like, why aren't they sleeping?
I think there's lots of different things that are playing a role there.
Yeah.
Is that, yes, their brain gets activated a lot quicker. Mm-hmm. So when they do wake up, instead of just being like, oh man, I'm just going to roll back over and go back to sleep.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, with the way that depression changes your thoughts and changes those cognitions, it can really kick into gear immediately that, oh man, especially if you've been having sleeping issues, you're like, oh my God, I'm awake again. I'm not going to go back to sleep. And look at the time. It's only 10:30 and I've only been asleep for an hour. And all of a sudden you've got these, like you said, you use the word ruminating thoughts. Yeah. So you're going to be going over and over the same thing, but then your thoughts can also race. Mm-hmm. Or you can just feel really down and just really flat, and you're like, why is this happening to me? And why can't I get back to sleep? And all I need is sleep. And do you know what I mean? So you can really get quite anxious as well about not going back to sleep.
Yes.
And then you can start to form habits, unfortunately. So to cope with not sleeping, you're like, oh, but if I get up and make a cup of tea, that's going to settle me.
Yes.
We'll get up and have a cup of water, or I'm just going to get up and pop the TV on, or I'm just going to grab my phone and just scroll for a bit because that will make me tired. Unfortunately, it's also perpetuating that sleep disturbance because you haven't got good sleep hygiene either.
Yes.
But yeah, the sleep one, because then poor sleep, as we know, affects you so much the following day, right? So everything feels sharper. Everything feels harder. Everything feels harder to cope with and harder to deal with.
Yes.
So when you do wake up in the morning after you've had a terrible night's sleep, your day looks bleak already, or your day feels hard already. So then you're facing down, you're having depression and you've had a really bad sleep, and it just kind of keeps on snowballing.
Yes. Yeah. It's hard.
Mm, absolutely. And then we're not going to talk about it today, but if you threw pain into that mix, so if you're also experiencing any sort of pain, whether it's chronic or acute, it then becomes even tougher to be managing that on top of being, you know, being really tired and suffering from depression as well. So yeah, it's really tough, the sleep side of things. The other thing that you can see sort of the polar opposites in is changes in appetite. So a lot of the time when people are suffering from depression, some people can overeat. So people can sometimes talk about eating their emotions and typically choosing not the healthiest of food groups to be doing that. And then some people stop eating.
Yes.
So you'll notice that some people might lose a lot of weight when they're depressed, and other people might gain weight when they're depressed. So it's interesting how it can really affect people so individually and be quite a unique combination of symptoms.
Can I just ask a question there, Sally? Does pain, suffering pain, can that create or cause depression?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay.
Because it can be awful.
Yeah,
especially when it's chronic pain, and it can feel like there's no end in sight, or there's no cure, or there's no treatment that really is working enough for you, it's pretty, can feel like a really bleak outlook.
Yes.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
And I guess there's something really important that I want to talk about, and that the behaviors that we just described isn't laziness. It's depletion. So depression drains energy, it reduces drive, and it shrinks the world. So these people who are suffering from depression, they aren't lazy. They, the depression is draining their energy, and it's reducing their drive, and it's, eradicating their motivation. And so when thinking, feeling, and behavior all reinforce each other, that's when people can feel stuck.
Mm.
But stuck does not mean permanent. Okay, so I know this is a really tough subject, obviously, to do on the radio as well, because it can sound really dire and it can sound doomsday-ish.
Mm.
This doesn't mean that it's permanent.
No.
This is just a current state that people can find themselves in.
Mm.
And yes, I know I've talked about that it needs to be persistent, but that doesn't mean it's forever. That doesn't mean it's permanent. So it's really important to know that there's definitely help out there, and we'll definitely be getting into the treatment side of things soon, because some of the things that put it into a bit more context is depression's waking up already feeling exhausted.
Mm.
So even for the people who aren't suffering from any sort of sleep disturbance with their depression,
and you still wake up exhausted.
Absolutely.
Wow.
Immediately like, oh my gosh, how do I get out of bed today?
Yeah.
And it's losing interest in things, like I said, that you used to enjoy, feeling disconnected from yourself and from others, feeling like everything takes too much effort, and carrying a constant sense of guilt or worthlessness. That one can be a really tough one too.
Mm.
That's not with everyone. I think that can really be depending on your self-esteem and self-worth as well. And here's what depression is not. It is not laziness.
Mm.
It is not weakness. It is not a lack of gratitude for your life.
Mm-hmm.
And it is not something that you can snap out of. Because I think, unfortunately, people looking from the outside in can be like, oh, but they should be grateful. They've got an awesome life. You know, they've got this family, or they've got these kids, or they've got this job, or they've got whatever, this house, or whatever it happens to be. But people with depression know that they have all of that, and they know that they should be grateful, but they still feel flat. They still feel not okay. So we can't just snap out of it.
No.
And also people are like, yeah, but they should just get up and get on with it. They should just be happier, or they should just, you know, move their body more, or they should eat better, or they should sleep better, or they should be happier, basically. This isn't a choice. Depression's not a choice that people would make. No one would make a choice to feel this way.
No, no one wants to feel like that. That's awful.
Yeah. So depression changes how the brain processes motivation, pleasure, and hope. It's not something that you can necessarily control in those moments.
Can you say that again? Because that sounds really important. Yeah. Like, it's a catchphrase that we all need to remember.
Depression changes how the brain processes motivation, pleasure, and hope.
That is the brain doing that. Mm,
yes. The person's not in control of that.
No.
Yeah. So if you've ever thought, I don't even know what's wrong, I just feel off, sometimes that can be depression speaking.
Wow.
Hmm.
Yeah.
So if you're comfortable, listeners, if you want to text me how depression shows up for you, or if you wanted to share anything that you've been going through lately that I could possibly chat about on the radio, please feel free to reach out on 0484 510152. And we're going to throw to another song and just have a chat about how this affects different age groups.
And we've got another chance to listen in for the marble drop. So get your pens out, your ears ready, because here it comes.
It's the secret sound. Here's your cue to listen in close. How many marbles are we dropping? Here it comes. Counted them? Text your guest now to 0484 510 152, and if you've got it right, you're in the draw to win.
Still no turning back. The dark days are done. The horses.
Thanks, Bowen. You're listening to 95.1 Gem FM. You're listening to the Check-In Show with Sally. And we've had a question in from a listener, and it is, great topic, Sally and Roxy. My question is, how can we spot depression in friends when they're doing their best to hide it until it's too late? Firstly, thank you for asking this. That's such a heavy and important question. And I want to say something gently but clearly at the beginning. And the answer is sometimes you can't.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, and that's not because you weren't paying attention, and that's not because you didn't care enough, and that's not because you failed them. Some people are incredibly good at masking.
Mm-hmm.
And they might be high functioning, successful, funny, social, and privately struggling very deeply.
Mm.
And some people hide it because of lots of different reasons. So there can be just shame or fear of worrying others, not wanting to be a burden, that they should be doing better, that they believe that they should be able to cope with it on their own, that they don't need anyone's help, that sort of stuff. And often the thought process sounds like, yeah, I'll deal with this on my own. I don't want to make this anyone else's problem and that sort of thing. So as we were saying before, depression can be very isolating.
Mm.
And even if they know that they had people there to support them, they didn't feel like they were going to reach out to them. And that was about how they felt about themselves, not about the people
right.
that were there for them, that could have been there for them.
Right.
So that said, sometimes there can be little small shifts that we can look for, especially if you feel like they're putting on a mask, and that can be pulling back slightly from connection. Maybe they used to write back to your message sort of within an hour and then it took a day, something as small as that. Changes in sleep or energy, and that's probably more for people who are living with this person. Yeah. Sometimes little thing, it can be, I wouldn't say this is necessarily a little thing, but giving away possessions.
Wow, okay.
Or perhaps sometimes talking about their will or estate, even like a little passing comment like, don't forget, you know, you can have my car.
Mm.
Just little things like that or, hey, you know, I'd want my ashes spread here, or that can just be smaller things that they might laugh off, but it could be them also communicating that they've considered ending their life. Talking about feeling trapped or hopeless, sometimes increased risk-taking, you know, do they get caught speeding recently, or have they been engaging in risk-taking behaviours, whether it's perhaps engaging in drugs or, you know, behaving just differently as well? Sudden calmness after a long period of distress. So sometimes it can be, unfortunately, the calm before the storm. So some people could have been like, oh, man, they've been really struggling and things haven't been going great for them, and then all of a sudden you see them and they're a bit happier or a bit calmer or a bit just more at peace. Unfortunately, that can be a sign that they've decided that they are going to end their life and they feel comfortable with that decision.
God.
Yeah. Saying things like, you'd be better off without me can be another one. But here's the important thing. Not everyone shows obvious signs.
Right.
So not every death is preventable with depression. And hindsight can make small things look bigger than they felt at the time.
Right.
So a lot of the time, for those left behind after a suicide, they'll be reflecting on every single last interaction that they had with that person, or over the past week or month or year or whatever it happens to be, and you'll overanalyze it. And with that sense of guilt, like, I could have done something, I could have been better, I could have reached out more, all those sorts of things. And I think it's really important that if you're listening, that you've lost someone to suicide and you're wondering, how did I miss it? Please hear me. Suicide is really complex. It's rarely caused by one moment or one conversation.
Mm.
And responsibility does not sit on the shoulders of one friend, one partner, or one family member. You can love someone deeply and still not see everything that's happening inside of them.
Mm.
It's not your guilt to bear
at
all. And I hope that we're covering off on some of the signs. And I think that there's also something that's, what we can do is, obviously, we all want to be creating environments where it feels much safer to speak up than what it can sometimes do. I'm not sure the gender of your friend, but males represent 75% of the suicides in Australia. And I think
that's high, isn't it?
It is awful. It is, yes. So, yeah, 75% of suicides in Australia are men. If we can create a safer environment for men to speak up, that's probably the
terrible.
Most important thing. So what we can actually do is we can ask, are you okay?
Yeah.
And you know how we're very typical Australians, like anytime we see someone or even on the phone, hey, how are you going?
Yeah.
That's how you going is a hello in Australia.
Yeah.
I'm talking about sitting them down, like putting your hand on theirs or on their shoulder or like looking properly into their eyes properly and being like, are you okay?
Yeah.
Like, are you really okay?
Yes.
And yeah, like what's been going on with you lately? You seem a little off, or if they don't seem off, I think we should still check in with our big personalities. I think we should check in with our extroverts, check in with the people who might be masking, who everything seems pretty good and everything's going great and that's just how they seem to be.
Yeah.
But maybe, I think we need to be checking in with them too.
Mm.
Hey, how are you going? How are you really going? Like you seem happy, but you've got a lot on your plate. Like, is that okay? And you know, just, I'm not saying you didn't do this. But, you know, if we're going to try and create these environments where people can feel like they can open up, that can be the type of thing too. Normalizing mental health struggles and talking openly about therapy and support and always letting people know that they're not a burden.
Yes.
And that you're there for them sort of 24/7 for that phone call if they ever feel like they need to call you. So something very important is asking someone if they are having suicidal thoughts does not put the idea in their head.
Right.
I think sometimes people are like, oh, but if I say that, maybe that'll... you know?
Yeah.
Trigger it for them. No. Research consistently shows that it reduces risk because it opens space.
Yeah, it exposes maybe a hidden...
Yeah, and that can be that burden that they then share, right? So, you know, if they're like, oh, my God, actually, I have been thinking that a bit.
Yes.
All of a sudden you've opened up this warm, safe space for this person to talk about how they're feeling. So, yeah, if someone in your life seems different and your gut's telling you something's off, then check in. You don't need to use perfect words. You don't need to be a psychologist. You don't need to be their therapist, but you can definitely just be their friend.
Yes.
And really ask them how they're doing. And, yeah, if there are people who'd rather sit with you in your pain than attend your funeral.
Yeah.
So anyone out there who's feeling this way, please reach out to anyone just to say you're not okay and you need someone to talk to. And if this topic feels really close to home today, please reach out to Lifeline as well on 13 11 14. They're available 24/7. There's also Beyond Blue, which is 1300 224636. But if you're in an emergency right now and if you're at imminent risk to yourself, please dial 000 for emergency services.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, thank you so much for texting that in. Listener, I know that it's a really heavy topic and I know that I'm really glad that we've gone through that today, because I can imagine that the ripple effects of suicide on those left, on the survivors, is truly catastrophic and can be really tough. But, we don't know what was going on in their head in those last moments or in those last weeks of their life for them to decide that that was the only option for them. And unfortunately, sometimes we can't make the difference that we want to make.
No. Gosh. So it's very sad. I can't wrap my head around, like, it must be at a very low point to be in that headspace.
Mm.
And I really love, there's an ad on TV at the moment where this guy... there are two guys, and one's on a job search, and he's finding it hard to find a job, and they're both male, right? The other guy has just got a small kid, and he rings up his friend without the job, and it's just really nice because he reaches out to the guy, and then he invites him to a party, and they get together. And but it's really, I actually almost tear up when I see this commercial, because I think it's really done in a genuine way. Mm. And it's such a good example of how guys can just support each other as well without being seen, I think, sometimes to, maybe it's, you know, not masculine enough.
Mm.
You're not masculine enough if you allow that sort of, you know,
yep,
those feelings in, but it's got nothing to do with masculinity.
Mm, not at all. And I love that too, that their friend reached out to them. I do definitely want to take it one step further, because I know that men can tend to be like, yeah, we caught up for beers, or we caught up for golf, or, you know, we went for a motorbike ride and just, you know, as an example, I was like, oh, but what did you guys talk about?
Yeah, nothing.
And they'll be like, oh, nothing? Like... golf and or riding bikes or whatever they did. And so whilst you can feel like your friend is there for you because they reached out, that's true. But I'd really want and particularly men, I want you to take a step further and actually ask how that mate is doing for not having got that job. Or, you know, if they've broken up with their partner, don't just take them out to get them drunk. take them out, sit them down and be like, how are you actually doing?
Yeah.
How can we help you?
Yeah, that's what I love about this ad, because he is just, how's it going? How's it going? He goes, this job search is doing my head in.
Mm.
Yep. And they talk about it.
Yep.
And then at this party, he goes, oh, I'm so glad you could make it, mate. And then he's socializing with, you know, other people. So it's a really good ad.
Yeah. So have a real conversation.
Yeah. Have a real.
Yeah. Don't just catch up. Have a real conversation as well. It's not going to scare them off. It's not going to push them to whatever. It's not going to push them to suicide, you asking them if that's what they've been thinking about.
No.
It's going to reduce their risk.
Yes.
And increase their support.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Wow. Well, maybe we should throw it to a song after segment, and we'll come back after the break, and we'll talk about youth depression to start off with.
Okay, cool. You like this one, Sky Full of Stars.
Yes. Hey, Bowen, you're listening to 95.1 Gem FM, and it's the check-in show with Sally. If anyone wanted to text anything else in after our last question before the break, it's 0484 510 152. So let's change tracks a little bit, and this time we're just going to talk about young people for a moment. So depression in teenagers, and it often doesn't look like lying in bed crying. So sometimes it can affect teens a little bit differently, or at least it presents a bit differently. So it can look like anger, defiance, school refusal, risk-taking behaviour, increased screen time, and withdrawal from family. And I think there'll be some people out there being like, that just sounds like a teenager, right?
Yeah, all good stuff.
Yeah. And it's true that obviously you can have elements of that in all teenagers, but it's when it's really persistent and it's really starting to impact whether it's their grades or their friendships or the relationship with their parents, that you can start to ask some questions around whether this might be something other than just teenage angst.
Mm.
So teens will often say things like, I'm fine, I don't care, leave me alone. And again, I know that teens do say that, but we need to be really mindful that is there not something sort of else going on underneath all of that.
Mm-hmm.
And underneath that can be, I don't know how to explain what's happening inside of me. So if us adults have trouble describing what flatness feels like, or feeling numb or feeling unmotivated, if that can feel tough to identify and describe sometimes, imagine what it's like for a teen. And a teen might be like, but, you know, I've got great friends at school and I'm getting good grades and I love playing sports. So why do I feel this bad? Why do I feel this way? So, yeah, I think sometimes it can be them not being able to identify what's happening or and not being able to describe it to their parent, for example. That can really be the struggle for them.
Right.
So if you're noticing any of those things, I think it's just really, like we were just talking about even before, with checking in with friends who don't seem okay. If you're like, oh, my teenager's been a teenager, but I want you to check in with them and just be like, hey, are you really okay? Like, is anything else going on? And if as a parent you're like, yeah, they're definitely not going to talk to me. Okay, well, what other adult do they trust? Do they have an aunt or an uncle, a grandparent, or a really close family friend? Is there someone else who can reach out for you that can kind of check in with them and double, you know, and see what's going on?
Yes.
Yeah, just to try and open up. I know that they can be like getting blood out of a stone sometimes.
Yeah, maybe there is special growing up that they get on well with better, you know, maybe a grandmother. You know, sometimes kids have got a special relationship with their grandparents.
Yeah, definitely.
Mm.
And sometimes we can see increases in those types of behaviours towards the end of their secondary schooling when a bit of pressure starts being applied to grades.
Right.
So if they're going for their ATAR to get into university and things like that, the pressure can increase and they can be putting pressure on themselves.
Mm.
Or if there's pressure from school or if there's pressure from parents and that sort of thing. So I think we need to be really mindful of those things as well. So some of the strategies for youth just on that particularly is reduce pressure temporarily.
Right.
So focus on safety and connection first. So if you sort of typically are talking to them about their grades, maybe it's time to kind of just put the brakes on that for a minute and just be like, hey, let's spend some good time together. Like, let's do something that you really enjoy, that we both enjoy really doing together, and trying to get them engaging in those activities that they used to find really fun or do find really fun, rather than only being focused on the pressure around being a teenager. And maybe it's also, you know, checking in on their screen time, like who's messaging them and what access do they have to their phone that you can't see, and, you know, are they potentially getting bullied and you haven't got access to that and they're not telling you about it because they're worried about the fallout or they're worried about the backlash. So really touching base with them and having conversations around cyber safety as well is really important. This is one for everyone. It's not just for youth, but trying to keep routines predictable. And so I think sometimes it can be like, oh, yeah, I'm like, my teenager just goes to their bed during whenever they want and they just fall asleep whenever. And they've got, you know, screens in there and they've got their phone or they've got the TV. Youth need schedules. They need routine and they need structure.
Mm-hmm.
And it's things like, actually, phones are left outside, there's no TV in your room, and, you know, bedtime is this time.
Mm.
Something reasonable that you can both agree on.
Jeez, that'd be hard now, wouldn't it?
It would be a lot harder, absolutely. Because they've got laptops and they've got iPad and a TV and a phone. They can all have all four.
I know.
All of those.
Oh, it would be really hard to enforce that as a parent, wouldn't it?
Mm. So it's about setting boundaries really early. So when they first get a phone, for example, but then absolutely you as a parent, you're the one who needs to be reinforcing those boundaries yes. and making sure they're being adhered to.
Mm.
So that can be something, because unfortunately the prevalence of bullying increases after 9 p.m. Is the latest stats. When it comes to cyberbullying, yeah.
Really?
So, yeah, because that's when kids are in their rooms on their own and there's no supervision. So the bullies are amongst it, and
wow.
the people being bullied are also on their phone and they're not being supervised.
I'm learning so much. That's just unbelievable. After nine, that's because they're all huddled in their bedrooms. Yep. And
so turn off the Wi-Fi at 9 p.m.
Wow.
Yep. And give them a break from their technology.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give them a book to read.
Mm. Yep, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Encourage small, achievable goals. So I think sometimes kids can feel like everything's a bit too much and all the goals are a bit too big and all that sort of thing. So I think helping them set small ones that they're definitely going to achieve can help them get that sense of accomplishment and that they're back on top of things. Model emotional language. So it's saying something like, I notice you seem flat lately.
Mm.
So I know that a lot of the time we can be like, my teenager's so lazy. So I think we want to be really careful around, maybe if we start rephrasing things like, hey, you seem really flat, or you seem quite down, or you seem just a bit numb, like nothing's really making you happy, nothing's really making you sad, you just seem quite numb or flat.
Yeah.
They might actually be able to identify with those words much more than, oh my God, they're just calling me lazy again.
Yes, they don't understand.
Yeah.
Why don't they ask, I'm sad, or, you know, like, I'm not feeling well.
Yeah, not feeling myself.
Yes.
Yeah, so I think that that's a really important change to the language that we might need to be using.
Mm-hmm.
And as I've said repeatedly, get professional support early. Don't wait for a crisis.
Mm.
So when we talked about that risk-taking behavior, if you're like, oh, man, they kind of, like, they broke out of their room the other day and left without telling me, you know, they broke curfew or all that sort of stuff. Yes. Don't wait for things to get so bad that you're having the police call and be like, hey, actually, we've got them in custody right now because we've just caught them drink driving or whatever it happens to be. I know that might be whether that's too extreme, but it's all about if you're noticing these small things that are starting to increase, that's the time to intervene as opposed to waiting for a crisis to happen. And most importantly, don't panic out there, parents. Stay steady. Young people need calm adults more than they need perfect adults.
Right.
So you might not handle it perfectly, but if you stay calm and you offer support and you offer help and you touch base and try and connect with them, that's the most important things.
Yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I thought we'd just go straight from youth into parents and some of the things that some of the signs of depression in parents can be really hard, because depression in parents often carries intense guilt. So there could be a lot of people out there thinking I should be grateful, or my kids deserve better, or I'm ruining them. And a really big one is sometimes some of my clients who have had to use, say, IVF, for example, for their children, they're the guilt of, but I really wanted these kids so bad and yet I feel depressed.
Mm.
It's not because the kids are causing this.
Mm.
Right, as we've said before, it's not always the circumstances that are causing this.
Yeah.
But don't get me wrong, like the stress of having children can definitely trigger something like a depressive episode.
Mm-hmm.
So children don't need perfect parents. They need emotionally available ones, and that includes showing them that adults can sometimes struggle.
Yeah.
And that, you know, that the adults will seek help and just be like, actually, hey, you know, I noticed that I've been feeling a bit sad. Mum's been feeling sad lately, and, you know, I'm going to go talk to someone about that and talk to my doctor and see if there's anything that can help me feel a bit better. And, hey, kids, like, yeah, you have to stay at home here with Dad today because I'm going to go for a walk because it's really good for my head, really good for my mind, or really good for my mood to go for a walk.
Mm.
And things like that. And just, you know, that's showing your kids that they need to look after themselves when they grow up too,
yeah,
when
exactly.
life gets hard.
Yeah.
And I'm just saying mum there because that's not, dads need to be the same.
Yes.
I've had a really tough day at work and it's really important to get home and be like, hey, I know you really want to see Dad and jump all over him, but he might need 10 minutes to decompress, or he might need to go for a quick run, or he's going to go for the gym and then he's going to be able to come back and engage with the kids better.
Yeah.
So strategies for parents can involve lowering household expectations.
Yeah.
So I think sometimes there can be the expectation that your house needs to be really tidy and that you need to be serving up perfectly healthy food all the time and your kids need to have their hair done all the time or whatever it happens to be. But let's lower those expectations if you're having a bit of a tough time.
Yeah.
You know, as long as your kids are loved, supported, fed something.
Yeah.
have a nice cozy bed to get into, that's the things that the kids are looking for.
Mm.
You don't need to have this perfect display home, or you don't need to have them enrolled in every single sport and all that sort of stuff that sometimes, you know, the societal expectations around that too. Build 10-minute connection rituals. So sometimes we can feel really disconnected from our kids, and that they can they can feel a bit like a burden. But if we have these connection time with them where it's one-on-one, and yes, you need to ask your other kids to wait, and if they're not the age where they can wait, then we need to carve out other time that's going to make that possible.
Mm-hmm.
And just spend some time doing something that they love that you also can tolerate. I'm going to use the word tolerate because maybe you won't love it, but you can tolerate and see the joy in their face, and that can sometimes really help with your mood as well. Ask for practical help. But I just say ask for help in any shape or form. So this can be things like meals. Like, as in, if someone's like, hey, you seem like you're really struggling, can I help in any way? I know that there's so many of us out there who instantly is just like, nah, I'm an independent woman, I can pull this off, I'm going to be right. But just to be like, yep, actually, could you cook me dinner this week?
Yeah.
Could you cook my family dinner this week? Do you know what I mean? So then your best mate rocks up with a lasagna or apricot chicken like my best mate does.
Yeah.
Or
ask
them.
Does she want to be my best mate?
Right.
Good on you.
or ask for childcare. Be like, hey, I have an appointment this hour that I really need to go to. Can you grab my kids from school?
Mm-hmm.
Can you watch them at their swimming lessons like my bestie did yesterday, actually?
Yeah.
Or, you know, can if you're struggling with transport, asking for a lift instead of walking and that sort of thing. So asking for some of that practical help can really ease the feeling that you're not coping with everything that's going on as well. And consider GP. So go and chat with your doctor and consider a mental health care plan where you come and talk to a psychologist about how it's going and getting some more strategies around how to improve your mood for sure. Saying things like, mum or dad's feeling a bit low lately and getting some help, which really models strength and not failure. So still not having full open communication with your children about exactly what's going on inside your head, but definitely being like, actually, I don't feel myself today.
Yeah.
Yeah. So sorry if I'm snapping a bit more this morning. I'm trying, you know, we're all trying really hard to get out the door and those sort of things. So just being able to acknowledge that perhaps, you're not coping, you're not doing as well as what you'd want to be, but you're definitely going to be seeking help for that. So I think that that's a really good time to throw to another song. And when we come back, we're going to be talking about depression in older adults.
That sounds excellent. All right. So this is another good song, Sally.
Oh, it is a goodie.
When you're down and troubled and you need a helping hand, well, nothing is going right, close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. You just call to do is call, and I'll be there. Yeah, yeah, yeah. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, and that old north wind should begin to blow, keep your head together and call my name out loud now. Soon I'll be knocking upon your yeah. Hey, ain't it good to know that you've got a friend? People can be so cold. They'll hurt you and desert you. Well, they'll take your soul if you let them. Oh, yeah, but don't you let them. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running. See you again. Oh, baby. Winter, spring, summer, or fall. Hey, now all you've got to do is call. Lord, I'll be there, yes, I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend, yeah. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? Good to know you got a friend. Oh yeah, yeah, you got a friend.
No.
You're listening to 95.1 Gem FM, and this is the Check-In Show with Sally. And we're going to move into talking about depression in older adults. So depression in older people is often unrecognized because it can look like physical complaints, increased aches and pains, memory concerns, withdrawal, and talking about being a burden. And some people can kind of just put that down to getting older.
Yes.
And I think that sometimes the older generation would also not use the word depression when it comes to that, because that was not as prevalent as what it is now. Not people aren't as educated about depression. Weren't as educated about depression as they are now. And they might just say things like, oh, I'm just tired, or I'm just getting old, that sort of thing. But persistent low mood is not an inevitable part of aging.
Right.
So if you're feeling flat, or if you're feeling low, or you're feeling down, and can still describe those low motivation or poor concentration or impacting appetite or sleep, in addition to physical complaints, aches and pains, memory stuff, then yeah, you probably still need to be going and having a chat with your GP about what's going on, because it might not just be getting older. And I think sometimes it can get misdiagnosed, or it can get underdiagnosed in this age group. And I think that, you know, this is the age group that we want them to be some of the happiest years of their life, so that they're not, you know, coasting into the twilight years really sad, or feeling really down, or feeling like they're a burden to their family.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, we want to be caring for them and lifting them up and giving them, you know, the best years of their life. So again, like I said, regular checkups with your GP, and to rule out any sort of those medical issues that might be contributing. And if they've kind of got you treated for the majority of your aches and pains or your ailments, but you still kind of have this persistent low mood, then really chatting with your GP about how that's feeling for you. Social connection is absolutely the second biggest thing to do after chatting with your GP, because a lot of the time older people can be quite isolated. Because they haven't got their kids around anymore, or perhaps even sometimes they've lost their partner, and so they're living alone and that sort of thing. So the social isolation part of getting older can be pretty detrimental to mental health, for sure. Absolutely. So it's about ensuring that you are engaged in local community groups. And listening to this station, you're going to find out all about them. This is where we're going to be talking about those types of groups as well. And there's so many things to be doing in Bowen in particular that can help you feel connected with your community. And volunteering is also a really good option. So if you're still wanting to kind of have a regular commitment that gets you out there, that can give you that sense of purpose. It gives you social connection, and it can give you it gives you an activity that's going to kind of keep that brain active as well. And so it ticks a lot of boxes, the volunteering side of things.
Yes.
And, you know, things like if you love karaoke, getting down to – I know the North Oz is doing karaoke a lot lately.
Yes, they do.
Yeah. And fun, even if you're not going to get up and get on the mic, even if you just enjoy listening, it's things like that. Have a bit of a boogie on the dance floor and meet some new people if you're wanting to meet new people, or drag your bestie along with you. Then there's the men's shed and stuff like that. So that can make you feel useful and have that purpose and all that sort of thing too. So that social connection is one of the most important things to do if you're feeling that persistent low mood.
Yes, that's right.
It says gentle movement. I don't want to imply that the older generation can't get out there and get some more than just gentle movement, but it's about going on those regular walks.
Yes.
Or it's about going to the gym and chatting to them about how to do an age-based strength program.
Yeah, pulling some weights.
That's it?
Yeah.
a huge one that's really kicking off is pickleball. Like, if you used to love playing tennis, but you now feel like it's too physical for you, then pickleball is absolutely
What's
for
pickleball?
You.
What's pickleball? Like, which one is it?
Well, pickleball's a version of tennis.
Yeah.
That's on a smaller court.
Yeah.
You've got a – I wouldn't know. It's a paddle rather than a – racket,
right,
and the ball is much bigger with holes in it, right? So it doesn't go as fast.
Perfect.
So you don't have to run as much,
yeah,
but it's still quite physical, and it's still got that it's got that sense of competition there, and it's really social.
Yeah.
And I'm pretty sure it's on Thursday nights at the tennis courts.
Yes. Yeah. Very good.
If anyone wants to get down there and do, and that's just such a great opportunity for people who aren't quite as mobile anymore. And that goes for any age group, actually. Like, if you've got an injury that prevents you from doing tennis, then pickleball is really a good option as well.
Exactly.
Of course, there's lawn bowls and stuff like that around in town. So, making sure that you're doing your exercise, because exercise has got to be I'll be talking about it later, yeah. but pretty much the number one treatment for depression. Yeah.
But walking is so good for you, and yeah. you know.
And there's even a walking group for the Heart Foundation. There are a lot,
yeah, there's two on Tuesdays and Thursdays yeah. from 4:30. I know this at Hansom Park.
Yep,
car park on Tuesdays from 4:30, and on Thursdays same time at the Front Beach.
Mm.
Yep. So you know, it's during winter it starts at 4:00.
Yeah.
But yeah.
And that's two birds with one stone, right?
Yeah.
So that's getting your movement in, and it's also getting social connection in because you're
right.
walking with others.
Yeah.
Structured weekly plans. I think sometimes some older adults can be like, the day is pretty endless because I wake up at, and they can wake up quite early and feel like there's a lot of unfilled time in yes. their day. So the more structured weekly plan that you can have that you go and do, and maybe you want to play bridge or you want to go and do aqua aerobics or yes. you're going to catch up every Tuesday you do. Mm. The Tuesday special at one of the pubs with your mates or whatever it happens to be. It's yes. about trying to have that structured weekly plan because our nervous system thrives on structure and routine.
Yes.
And so,
and you know, when you've got routine as well, it leaves less space for undecisiveness. If you know what I mean. There's you when it's planned, it actually takes less energy to live your life when you've got a routine.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes if you do find yourself just sitting down and not doing much, that can make you feel worse as well. And yeah. so it's about finding those little kernels of motivation that you might have and you know, acting on them. And we'll be talking about ways of treating depression in the very next segment, because we need to move on to something more hopeful
yes.
and let everyone know that this may be the way that you're feeling, but there's definitely hope out there for feeling better.
Yeah.
And families, I just want to say that if you've got older adults in your life, please check in because isolation is such a major risk factor.
It is.
And we're talking before about masking, and I think sometimes we can be like, hey, how you doing? Like, are you doing okay? Oh, yeah, like I'm meeting up with this and that and doing this and rah, rah. And that might all be true, but maybe they're not catching up with the people that they really want to be.
Yes.
Like maybe they want to be squeezing their grandchildren. Maybe they want to be squeezing their great-grandchildren. Or maybe they want to see their son or daughter.
Yes.
I know that. You know, my parents really love if I see them without their grandkids around.
Yeah.
Because they actually get to have a conversation with me.
That's right.
So reach out to, I want all the families to hear this too and to reach out to any older adults that they've got in their life.
So important.
Yeah.
So important.
Isolation can be a really big one.
Yes.
And inviting them along to events, even on holidays, that sort of thing, just to kind of definitely keep them included and to make sure we're staying on top of their mental health as well.
Yeah. Well, I used to go visit my mum every afternoon for a coffee and a chat. Well, actually, every morning and afternoon, there's overkill, isn't it? But, you know, she lived by herself and, you know, she did. She went to community groups and stuff like that. But, you know, it's still nice, isn't it, to get a visitor?
Absolutely.
At home, that's all, you know, an hour?
Yeah.
It's not much at all.
Yep, make him a cup of tea.
Yeah.
Yep.
All and catch up on what the day was like.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
So we'll throw to another song, and when we come back, we're going to talk about what you can do at home to help support the depressive symptoms.
Okay, and here's another shot at the secret sound. Count carefully.
It's the secret sound. Here's your cue to listen in close. How many marbles are we dropping? Here it comes. Counted them? Text your guest now to 0484 510 152 and if you've got it right, you're in the draw to win. But I can't make them stay. At least that's what people say.
shake, shake. Yeah.
You're listening to 95.1 Gem FM, and this is the Check-In with Sally show. And we're going to move on to something a bit more hopeful. We've been talking about depression today, and now we're going to talk about that depression is treatable. And while professional support is incredibly important, there are also things that that can help at home, gently and consistently. So not big dramatic changes, just small stabilizers. And the reason I talk about it like that is because I know that it can be hard enough to think about doing the small things, so that's why we're not going to do any big dramatic changes. Not to say that you shouldn't chat to your GP and look at getting a referral to talk to a psychologist, because I know that consistently the research shows that one of the best treatments for depression is counselling in conjunction with medication. If you feel like that's what you need, then definitely going and chatting to your GP for that medication and referral is your best option. But what we're going to be really speaking about, and I'll get into it shortly, is that there's the research out of the University of South Australia a couple of years ago showed that exercise is 1.5 times better at treating depressive symptoms than medication and counselling.
That's massive.
It's massive. So it's going to be unsurprising, guys, that I'm going to be chatting to you about moving your body when it comes to treating depression. But before we get into that, we're going to talk about structure. So structure before motivation. So depression says, I'll do it when I feel like it. Or actually, a lot of the time it probably says, I'm not going to do that, because that's how bad it can, that's how yes. unmotivated you can feel.
Yes, exactly.
But waiting for motivation is often what keeps people stuck. So unfortunately, motivation won't necessarily just start rising again without action. So instead, if you start to just small things like waking up at roughly the same time every day, eating at regular intervals, and schedule one small task in the morning and one in the afternoon, and just sleeping consistent. So I know you said waking up at the same time, but it's also going to bed at the same time. Yeah. If you just do those small things, even just having that sort of structure, that sort of routine, and those couple of little action points can help facilitate motivation.
Right. Yeah.
Because your nervous system loves predictability.
Yes.
It feels calm when it knows, hey, we're going to get up at 7 o'clock every morning and we're going to go to bed at 10 o'clock every night. And I know that sounds like 9 hours, so it doesn't need to be quite that. But if you're not going to fall asleep straight away, then that's around that sort of schedule time you should be looking at doing. And your nervous system loves that sort of predictability. It's like, okay, we're going to get up and we're going to eat brekkie and then we're going to eat lunch here and that sort of stuff. And that's going to be, even just that sort of routine and consistency is going to get you those small wins with your motivation. So in terms of behavioral activation, so research consistently shows that small intentional actions can shift mood over time. So things like choose one enjoyable activity, choose one mastery activity, so something that gives you a sense of achievement, and one connection activity.
Yeah.
So even if it's, for example, the enjoyable one can be sit in the sun for 5 minutes. And I know that people are like, oh my God, Sally, it's so hot. I get it.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about whether it's a bit earlier in the morning, so it's not that scorching, insane humidity sun that we can get.
Yeah.
But there's evidence abounds when it comes to getting the sun on your face and the grass under your feet, because it'll ground you in that moment, and the sun will getting that sunshine on your face is just really good for people. Absolutely. Or even standing with your feet in the ocean, sun on your face, that sort of stuff. I know the ocean really speaks to a lot of people and brings people a lot of joy, and I'd definitely be suggesting that too. one of the mastery things can be fold one basket of washing, not all of it. Because I've seen the piles before. I know what my house can look like too when it comes to...
I think you've been to my place.
So just get your...
I've got a whole bed covered in unfolded. Oh, my God.
And
it's so,
so see
bad.
How you would look at that and just be like, that's insurmountable amounts of folding, right?
You're right.
I can't do it. That's going to take me hours and it's just so much of my time and I hate folding. Yes. So see how you just talk yourself completely out of it.
Yep.
I'm talking about going, grabbing your washing basket.
And just one.
Pulling a tiny bit of that pile into that washing basket, sitting and down, putting your favorite show on and folding it in air conditioning.
Yeah.
That's it.
Okay. I'm going to do it.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it, Sally.
Because inevitably what can also happen is that will kickstart action, which will kickstart motivation. So a lot of the time, action actually precedes motivation.
Right.
So as in, if you're doing something, you'll get motivated to do more. Or you fold that load of washing, you're like, oh, my God, I'm going to go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the one thing can lead to another as well. And the other can, and then the choose, we did enjoyable activity, mastery activity, and then the connection activity, text one person.
Yes.
Reach out and be like, hey, I know I've been a bit MIA, how you doing?
Yeah.
And just, even if you just start that conversation with one person, that can give you that sense of connection.
Yes.
So small actions build momentum.
Yeah.
Okay. They don't need to be big, massive things. You know, we talked about your whole two room or one room situation, which is massive.
The two room predicament. Yeah.
So the mastery thing can be, actually, I'm just going to go and grab this one box that I'm going to unpack, or I'm just going to grab this one load of washing and I'm just going to fold that one. Or, you know, I'm just going to, I know my whole kitchen's a mess. I'm just going to unpack the dishwasher.
Yes.
And then go do something else, or just go sit and do nothing after that. So body first, brain second. So when thoughts feel overwhelming, go to the body. Mm-hmm. So when your head's really full of whether it's, you know, really tough, hard thoughts or dark thoughts, that sort of stuff, or if you're just feeling really flattened down, if we put the body first, the brain will follow suit. So go for a gentle walk or sit down and do some stretching or jump in the shower and, you know, let the thoughts, because I don't know if there's many parents out there listening today, but I know that when my kids were being particularly feral when they were young, the solution was just add water.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'd put a sprinkler on, or I'd give them a hose, or I'd set up a little water table, or we'd go for a swim, or we'd do anything to do with water because it would calm them. This is the same for adults.
Yes.
Just add water. So jump in the shower, jump in the pool, jump in the ocean, whatever it happens to be, that's going to help calm that nervous system too. Even cold water on the face, if you know that you need to, unfortunately, pull this mask on, that everything's okay. Because you need to face your day, whether it's with work or kids or whatever it happens to be, then splash your cold water on the face. And, of course, the one that I always love is some slow breathing.
Yeah.
So we've talked about box breathing before, where you breathe in for 4 seconds, hold for 4 seconds, breathe out for 4 seconds, and hold for 4 seconds. If that one's feeling a bit tough, then trying 5 in, hold for 3, and 5 out.
Right.
Yeah. Or try and just breathe out for longer than you breathe in.
Yeah,
whatever's going to work for you.
I think the four rule's good.
Yeah.
Breathe in for 4, hold for 4, breathe out for 4, hold.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So movement metabolizes stress hormones and shifts physiology.
Say that again.
Movement metabolizes stress hormones.
Stress hormones.
Yep.
Yeah.
Helps you process them and shifts physiology.
Right.
So I know that the last thing you can feel like doing sometimes is exercise.
Yes.
But it's definitely the thing that's going to help.
I know. I was going to say to you, like, you know, you say, oh, we'll go for a walk, but sometimes they're going, oh.
Yep.
I can't do it.
It's about thinking about what's your most productive time. So what's the most likely time that you could go for a walk? Do you wake up in the morning and that's when you're feeling your best, as opposed to in the afternoon when the day's gotten, you know, the day's taken too much out of you and you definitely don't have that in the afternoon. Whereas for me, or for some people, and this is probably me included, I love exercising in the afternoon. Like a twilight run is my absolute jam, and I would go to the gym in the afternoon rather than the morning, but that's not everybody. So it's about finding what's going to work for you. If some people are like, yeah, but I'm most productive at 10 and it's way too hot to walk at 10, don't make it a big one. Go along, for example, like the path along from around Hanson Park there all the way along the beach. It's fully shaded for a really good amount of time. Just walk up and down in the shade. And if you are like, yeah, but I don't feel like it, okay, just go for 5 minutes.
Just get
just take a couple of steps. And I don't want to imply that it's just snap out, you know, just do it. I understand that it's still really tough. Call a friend and go with them. Go with a family member or take your dog. If you're like, oh, I love taking my dog, but I just take him to the beach and then I let him off the lead, but you don't move.
Yeah, that's no good.
You move for a bit. Yes, yes. Okay? It doesn't have to be long. It doesn't have to be far. But just starting that because momentum metabolizes that stress hormone in the body.
Yes.
Okay. And now let's talk about connection. So, because I can keep telling you that exercise is the number one treatment for depression. But it's, and like I said, I understand it's a whole other ball game to really get out there and do it. But it's about finding the stuff that you love doing, finding a buddy to help keep you accountable, and try and set it into a schedule so that it's easier to follow and easier to follow up with. And if you don't do it that day, instead of berating yourself and saying, oh, my God, I'm so lazy or I didn't go and what's the point and all that sort of stuff, just be like, tomorrow's a new day.
Yes.
Tomorrow's another day to go for a walk. Tomorrow's another day to hit the gym or tomorrow's another day to reach out and do a team sport or whatever it happens to be. Don't – if you keep on saying, but I haven't been so there's no point in going, then you'll never start.
No, that's right. You have to start somewhere.
Mm.
Yeah.
Now let's talk about connection because after exercise, the very next important thing is definitely connection. So this part matters really deeply. We are social beings. Our brains evolved for connection, not isolation. So when depression tells you that you're a burden or no one wants to hear from you or you're too much, that's the illness talking.
Right.
That doesn't mean it's factual. That doesn't mean it's true. Your friends are dying to hear from you. Yes. They're wondering where you've been.
Yes.
They're wondering how they can help you.
Yes.
So definitely please reach out. Humans are wired to co-regulate. So we calm each other's nervous systems. We find safety in proximity.
Mm-hmm.
So if you go to your partner and you're like, oh, my God, I am just not feeling okay and things really feel overwhelming, and even if they're just putting their arms around you and holding you, that's going to co-regulate you.
Yes.
That's going to help your nervous system calm down by them being calm with you.
Yes.
So it's really important that we reach out and we get support from other people. We weren't meant to do this alone.
Well, we just go up and hug. We should hug our partners every night, shouldn't we?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I won't get into it today, but there's heaps of research about how you should be kissing for longer than 9 seconds, I think it is.
Oh, really?
Yeah, to actually to release the oxytocin and to release all those awesome hormones. Don't just peck each other on the cheek or the mouth or whatever. Like, have a really good passion. It'll make you feel heaps better.
That's a good one. Well, we have to have an episode of that one soon then, right?
I think we might need to talk about relationships next time,
I think so. Yeah, that would be good.
That is my jam as well. I'd love to do that. So maybe that's what'll be our next topic.
All right.
I'll talk about kissing. So, isolation increases depressive symptoms, whereas connection buffers them.
Mm-hmm.
And connection doesn't have to mean deep emotional conversations. It can literally be sitting next to someone while you're watching TV.
Yeah.
It can be going to the shops together or sending them a funny meme, attending a group activity, or can you just sit with me? Sit and watch the ocean or sit and watch the sunset or the sunrise or something along those lines as well. Being a human who needs support does not make you a burden. It makes you human.
Yeah.
Okay. So I think that sometimes we can always be like, but no one wants to hear my problems. Well, yeah, we do, because if we want the reverse, right? We want reciprocation. So if whenever I'm feeling low, I want to be able to come to you and be like, man, this is really tough.
Yeah.
And so when it's low for you, you come to me. Oh, man, this is really tough.
Yeah.
So we can support each other. And if someone in your life is struggling, your presence matters more than your solutions.
Yes.
Okay. So you don't have to
really
fix.
That's really important.
Yeah. You don't have to fix them. Mm. You just have to stay.
Yes.
You have to be there presently for them, physically for them. Because the more likely that you are, if you're doing that, the more likely they are to open up and actually talk about what's going on for them too.
Yeah.
Yeah. So if depression's ever made you pull away from people, I want to gently ask, who is one safe person you can reach out to this week? You don't have to solve everything, but just open that door a crack.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm. And let someone in.
Okay.
So I think we're nearly running out of time. Do you think we've got time for one more song and then come back?
Yeah, we'll do that even if we go over a bit.
That's okay.
I'm sure. I know that we just got a thing. Everyone's glued to their radios, I think.
Oh, look out.
When you're weary
All right, that's been the check-in show with Sally today. I know we've gone over a little bit and you're listening to 95.1 Gem FM, and I really want to finish with something important. Depression is convincing. It tells you nothing will change. It tells you that you're stuck. But depression is a state, not your identity. And if today's show has brought up any hard feelings, then I really want to reiterate to go to Lifeline on 13 11 14. They're available 24/7 every day. And there's also Beyond Blue, which is 1-300-22-4636. And if you're in any sort of imminent or immediate danger, please call 000 for emergency services. Reaching out is not dramatic. It's brave. It is nothing to be ashamed of. The stigma around mental health needs to be squashed, and reaching out's going to do that. So this has been the check-in show with Sally on 95.1 Gem FM. Be gentle with yourself this week, and remember, struggling does not mean failing. It means you're human.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Sally. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bowen.
The heart is a blue. No room, no space to rent in this town. You're out of luck, and the reason that you had to care, the traffic stuck, and you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Someone you can lend a hand in return for grace.
Playing the music you want to hear. 95.1 GEM FM.